be rather razor thin. So I wish everyone well. So thank you, Brian, for joining us tonight. I think this is your second visit. I remember when you dropped in on us about a month or two ago. So I hope you'll return as in future installments of this Technical Mess.
No, and I thank you very much for your comments. Much appreciated, and your contributions to this.
Ah, you're welcome, Brian. Anyway, this is AC2GS. It's been lovely. Thanks for all the people who participated tonight, and I hope you'll come back next Sunday night when we try and do it all over again at 8 p.m. And now is good time as any for the SpaceNet report, so WS2N will take it away.
Fine business, Roy. AC2GS, WS2N. And, yeah, and then, I don't know if Jim knows, but we're here every Sunday, 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. You're in, you're out. So, yeah. Okay, as far as the SpaceNet report goes, yeah, like Frank said, there's a lot of things going on that are making it into the news, some more than others. I mean, mainstream news. One of the stories that you'll be hearing about within, well, August 27th anyway, at 3:38 in the morning, which is Wednesday, there's a SpaceX Falcon 9 going to be launched with a crew that's going to be on board. It's called the Polaris Dawn mission, and you're going to have four people, two guys and two women, that are going to be going up for about 4 or 5 days. And the reason they call it Polaris, or Polaris Dawn, is because they're heading over the poles, you know. So you know, that's where they get that name. So it'll be, you know, roughly a 90-degree inclination, where most inclinations for crew flights are usually equatorial, or like the International Space Station, which is 51.6 degrees inclination. So it's going to be the first time for humans actually doing a polar orbit. The closest anybody got to it was way back when first woman went up, a Russian, Valentina Tereshkova. She went up early 1960s with, I think it was around 40 orbits, and that was around 60 degrees plus inclination. So the idea of this is, first of all, it's never been done before. I'm not sure why they're picking this polar orbit, but they're also they're also going to have a high inclination orbit. SpaceX is going to go up to around 800 miles high, and it will be elliptical, so it'll come back down to, you know, around 180, 200 miles. So that'll be, you know, apogee and perigee will be the low point. So we'll see how they do. It's a very different flight. The commander is this fella that flew before, Jared Isaacman. He flew before for SpaceX. He was the commander on the Inspiration 4 mission. You might remember that being in the news. It was the first time four people were going to be independently going up that had nothing to do with NASA. And he took three other people up with him. And they kind of made history by doing that. I think it was a 3 or 4 day mission. Again, that did not go to the International Space Station. But it also didn't go on a polar orbit, and it was not a very high inclination. It was a little higher than the International Space Station, which is at 250 miles. Now, this thing's going to go up to over 800 miles. And there's a couple of problems with that, because it'll be going into the area of the Van Allen belt, which has radiation is within those belts. They don't like to stay there too long. You know, that doesn't help biological people. It also doesn't help equipment to stay in that location for too long. You know, if you have radiation, you could get radiation into your computers, into your, you know, the thousands of circuits that are on board that spacecraft. So I don't know why they're tempting fate, but they are. The highlight of the Polaris Dawn mission will be a spacewalk. It'll be the first time a private company, in this case SpaceX, will be doing a spacewalk with nothing to do with NASA. They design their own spacesuits. You know, you see them in flight suits, which are essentially spacesuits. Normally, you know, when they're on board the Crew Dragon, you have, you know, suits that they pressurize to some degree, and you know, if there's a failure in the vehicle, either going uphill or downhill, you know, they'd be protected by the suits for a period of time. Now, they're different spacesuits than the ones that they would use for an EVA, just like NASA. NASA has, you know, flight suits going up, flight suits going down, but they have these big, bulky spacesuits that work independent of the space station once they're outside. You know, they have in the space station, they have hoses connected to the suit before they open the door. But before they open the door, they disconnect those hoses. You know, air, water. They shut them down, and then they go outside for 6 or sometimes 8 hours. They'll do a spacewalk, and then they'll come back in. These suits that SpaceX designed took almost 3 years. That's all it took, about 3 years to design, actually. That's very short for something like that. But they claim they've tested them extensively, you know, in vacuum chambers and all, with heat, cold. You know, you get into space, one side of your spacesuit, you could be a couple hundred degrees. The other side, you could be minus a couple hundred degrees. And they've tested these things. So they're going to actually have two spacewalks. Isaacman will be going out first, and they'll spend, you know, maybe 10, 15 minutes outside the spacecraft. And then he'll come back in, and then the woman, she actually works for SpaceX, Sarah Gills. She's going to be doing a spacewalk as well. The other two will, be, of course, remain inside the spacecraft. They'll do a spacewalk one at a time. They'll also be tethered. They'll be connected. It looks like they're going to have some kind of hose connections. I'm not sure what's going through those hoses. You know, I'm not sure if it's going to be air, cooling water, or not. You know, I haven't found any information about that yet. But if it is, that's very strange. You know, the NASA astronauts, when they go out, big backpacks, they have on their backpacks, they have air, cooling, battery power. They have carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide scrubbers on board the spacesuit as well, to take any carbon dioxide they're exhaling, and they treat that. So they're really in a portable spaceship when they go outside on the ISS. Now, one thing I don't like that these people seem to be missing. I did see what their spacesuit looks like. It looks like they don't have a PLIS system, which is it's really like a manned maneuvering unit, emergency system that NASA has. If they get separated from the spacecraft for any reason, or the International Space Station, you know, they could turn this thing on. It has little nitrogen jets, and they could, you know, change the orientation, point themselves back toward the ISS, and, you know, they could come back. It's never been used in an emergency, but, you know, they have tested it numerous times many years ago. I remember them flying around inside the cargo bay when they first tested the PLIS system out. Now, it's different than the big manned maneuvering units that, that NASA had, before that. Those were designed to separate from the space shuttle entirely, and they'd float away, untethered. They would go over to a flying satellite, capture it, and actually bring it back into the shuttle. They used this thing, three or four times over the years. What came from that was this emergency system that they have on their backpacks today. The crew that's going to do a EVA this time around with SpaceX doesn't look like they have that. And if they have a small version of it, I haven't read anything about it as well. So that sounds kind of risky. The other thing I don't like about it is there's no airlock in this crew vehicle. What they're going to have is, they're going to depressurize. And it's going to take many, many hours, probably 24 hours or more, to start breathing pure oxygen inside the cabin for everybody, for all four people, not just the two that are going to be going out. And they all have these, same spacesuits. So what's going to happen is they're going to bring the whole spacecraft down to pure vacuum on the inside, and then they'll be able to open the hatch. And by the way, the hatch is the front end of the spacecraft. Normally, the front end has a docking ring, which docks to the IDA, to the International Docking Adapter on the International Space Station. SpaceX has removed that completely for this flight. They don't need it, they're not going to the space station. So that's going to be their way out and their way in. They really wanted to, idea is to test the spacesuits to make sure they're good, because eventually they plan on doing, many EVAs for SpaceX in the future. So we'll see. You're going to have four people, exposed to the vacuum of space at the same time. That's never happened before. Most they ever had was three. They did that on one of the shuttle flights. But here you're going to have four. And if something goes wrong, there's not going to be one person to tell everybody what happened. It sounds like either it's risky and I'm missing something because they haven't printed enough information about it, or, it's very safe. Hopefully it's very safe. Any comments? This is WS2N for the Space Net Report.
Kilo Echo 2 Alpha Juliet Uniform.
Good evening, Charlie. Kilo Echo 2 Alpha Juliet Uniform. WS2N. How are you, Charlie?
This mission will also involve 38 research experiments that will help understand how space travel affects the human body.
Well, yeah, I guess they'll have all of that. Every space flight that has gone up, there's always experiments with the human body. So I'm not sure how they're going to do 38, but I take your word for it. I guess checking a heartbeat. They have all kinds of equipment attached to these people. It would be one, and then you can go down the list. Temperature and all of that. Back to you, John.
As of May 22, 258 individuals from 20 countries visited the International Space Station. The top parting countries include the United States with 158, Russia with 54, and you got the other countries like Japan and Europe.
Very good, yeah. Okay, yeah, that's a good list. There's 21 countries involved with the International Space Station. So, everything from England to Spain, to France, to
Romania, Israel, so many countries have all participated and contributed to the ISS. So every now and then, they'll take an astronaut from one of those countries, train them for a couple of years before they go up, and they will do that. That's common practice. Right now you have on board, you have 9 people on board. 3 of them are Russian. One guy is from, where was he from? I'm trying to think. Anyway, I could look it up. And you have a couple of women. Epps is one lady. She finally made it up, thank God. A couple of years ago, she was scheduled to go, and they canceled her and replaced her with somebody else. And I'm sure she was disappointed about that, but a couple of years later, she got a flight. And, of course, you have Sarah Williams up there now, one of the astronauts from the Starliner mission. And you've got Butch Wilmore. He's also from the Starliner mission. Talk about them in a minute. Any other comments?
Cost NASA $3 billion a year to operate the space station. That's a phenomenal amount of money.
Oh, good. Sounds like the price went down. A couple of years ago, I remember reading $4 billion. They always said it takes $4 billion a year to operate the space station. There's a lot to it, you know. There's cargo flights going up and down. Your crew flights alone, you have at least 2 from the United States going up per year. So each one is a little over $50 million a seat. So you have, two, you got what, 400, four, you got over, almost, over $500 million just for the crews going up and down. And now you have all those people, probably 30 or 40 people in mission control on a regular basis, 24 hours a day. Those people have to get paid. The countless science projects that are going on the station. Constant equipment going up and down, science equipment. Yeah, there's a lot to it. Anyway, back to you, Charles.
How's Butch and Sonny doing? Are they going to be up till February?
Yes, yeah. I heard the news conference on Saturday. Well, that was what, yesterday. And the somebody had to make a call, and nobody wanted to roll the dice and have them come back on Starliner. You know, they said that lessons learned from the shuttle, from the Columbus shuttle, so when Columbia blew up, burnt up, came through the atmosphere. They back then they felt that, they should have waited a little bit. They also, that flight also had, was not designed to go to the International Space Station. All flights after that disaster went to the space station, except for one. So they did another Hubble rescue mission. Yeah, they learned from that, and they're not going to take a chance. Bill Nelson, who's NASA administrator now, himself became an astronaut when he was younger. He definitely made the call that they're not going to be coming back on Starliner, they're coming back on a SpaceX crew bag. Vehicle, and not a long time. February, instead of an 8-day mission, it's turned out to be an 8-month mission. They've already been up there since what, June 6th. They launched in June 5th and docked on the 6th. Now they've been stuck there for a couple of months while they try to figure this out. So Starliner itself will eventually undock, come back and land in New Mexico, on the ground, all by itself.
and they're going to send up a crew vehicle. One was scheduled to go in September, mid-September, and they were going to send four more people up, you know, on a standard rotation, six-month rotation. But because of the problem, they're only going to send two, the pilot and co-pilot, most likely. And their mission is to stay until February. So that's what they're going to do. They'll launch, they'll stay until February, and when they come back in February on board, they'll have Williams and Wilmore. They'll join them. And then there's a spacesuit problem. Talk about spacesuits. The flight suits on Starliner, the blue ones that they have, are not compatible with the crew SpaceX Dragon. So, you know, they have, you've got to plug in, you know, when you hook up your equipment, your spacesuit inside that spacecraft, you're hooking up electrical communications, hooking up cooling lines, you're hooking up air, you got to be able to pressurize it if you have to, and none of that is compatible. So they're going to wind up sending up two space suits for Williams and Wilmore. Somewhere along the line, I'm not sure, you know, when that's going up. My guess is probably on that flight or a subsequent flight, maybe a cargo flight, you know, either Cygnus or you know, another SpaceX cargo vehicle. Any comments?
Now, the International Space Station is only 356 feet. You got nine people up there. Don't you think it's a little crowded?
Yeah, well, they have 15 different modules, so there's plenty of room. These modules are big. You know, each, like the Kuiper module is 30 feet long and 14 feet diameter. And then they have another module coming off the Kuiper, like a part two of Kuiper. You know, a little shorter, but, you know, and that's just one module. And they have up to 15 of these things. You know, but the Kuiper is the biggest one. Some of the other ones are, you know, probably 20, 26 feet long, but they're all roughly 14 feet in diameter. There's a lot of room. They've handled 13 people at one time. They've done that. So, yeah, they're not going to have a problem with that. There's plenty of food, plenty of oxygen, plenty of clothes, and whatever they don't have comes up in these cargo vehicles, Charlie.
Yes, they got a cargo vehicle last week, and also the Russians got one the week before. They got plenty of stuff up there now.
Copy that. They're doing okay. They're very happy. They've spent at least 6 months on board the space station before, so it's home for them. But if you're interested in step-by-step construction of the International Space Station, Charlie, I did a presentation a couple of years back, you know, for the club. And if you go over to the Limark Club and you go to the YouTube section, you find a one YouTube that has a picture of the International Space Station on it. That's my presentation. And you know, if you want to kill an hour and 15 minutes, that's how long it is. I mean, if you're actually going to sit through the whole thing, you know, if you want to fast forward it, of course, you could do that. But I have, you know, step-by-step construction of the International Space Station in a module by module. And it's all related to amateur radio, how amateur radio fits in to the space station. So you might get a kick out of that. Back to you, Charlie.
Yeah, last week I didn't mention SpaceX launched 116 satellites in one shot?
I don't know. I know they've done quite a few at one time. There is a system for that. They put, you know, 50 to 100 satellites, you know, on this one transporter thing, and then that's put on the rocket, enclosed in the fairings, and then they release them one at a time. So I'm not sure about that. They've done that type of thing before. Their own satellites, they launch Starlink satellites on a regular basis. They used to do 50, 52 at a time. That's when their satellites were a little smaller. They went to the B2 version, you know, a bigger version of their satellites about a year or so ago. And now they launch only 22, 23 at a time. So, yeah. They've landed, what, 340 boosters over the years successfully. Yeah, out of all the launches, I think it's 340, some number like that. So, you know, they got it down to science. They just launched another one, I think, yesterday. And that was with Starlink on it. And that's a brand new booster. Some of these boosters have flown over 20 times. The one they launched yesterday was brand new. So they're designed to do that. Back to you, Charlie.
Yes. They come down and they land vertically where they want them to land.
Oh yeah, and they, you know, they launch from, right now they launch from two locations. They have two launch pads in Florida, and then they have the one launch pad that they use in Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. So they have three different launch pads. So they're busy. You know, but you know, one other company that will be very busy, if they could ever get their act together, is going to be Jeff Bezos' company, Blue Origin. They plan on launching in September. Hopefully they can. Maybe October. There might be some delays. They don't want to delay past October because it'll be the first mission of the New Glenn. New Glenn is this 325-foot tall rocket, you know, as big as the, bigger than the Falcon 9. Almost 5 million pounds of thrust on this thing. Seven engines, seven big DE-4 engines, each one producing 550,000 pounds of thrust. And that'll be their inaugural flight. And NASA trusts them. They're putting two satellites on board for their first flight. They're not worried about this thing blowing up. And two satellites are called Escapade. And Escapade, you know, it's got this, it's an acronym for this big long thing that I wrote it down here. Escape and Plasma Acceleration and Dynamics Explorer. So it's two satellites that are going to be going to Mars. Now, the problem that they might have is the other day, one of the, they're building a bunch of rockets. I think they have three or four under construction in Florida. They haven't gotten the first one off the ground yet, and they're already building the other ones. But I think it was the second or third one that would be flown. The second stage, they moved from outside to the inside. And it was very hot and humid outside, and they wanted to put it in, you know, into the building. But by doing that, the building's air conditioned, and apparently they didn't pressurize it enough with nitrogen on the inside to hold the shape of the second stage. You gotta remember these stages that they build, you know, sometimes they're thin, they're weak, you know. You can actually push it in like a beer can, you know. So what they did is they brought it in and it was sealed. It wasn't vented. So it would be like, you know, taking a Coke can and pulling a vacuum on it. Or, you know, like the old trick when you're you know, were taking science, and they would put steam inside of a can, and you know, put top on, and then as it cooled, the whole thing would crush. You know, it was amazing. That type of thing happened. So whether or not that delays their first flight, I hope it doesn't. We'll have to see. But that should be interesting. That's a very large rocket, New Glenn. And if they get things rolling in the beginning, they plan on doing roughly 12 flights for the first year, and then they plan on doubling that, you know, the year after that, and they'll be off to the races like SpaceX. Good thing about the New Glenn rocket, you know, you got to remember this thing's almost the size of the Saturn V rocket. It will be reusable, so they plan on launching it up like SpaceX. First stage is going to come back down through the atmosphere, and they have a drone ship similar to what SpaceX has out in, around 600 miles out. SpaceX usually goes around 400 miles out, and they plan on landing on the drone ship that way, and then reuse this whole first stage. Second stage for now, it's a throwaway. You know, it'll go into space. It'll put the payload, whatever it might be, could be anything from satellites to eventually people. They plan on launching people on New Glenn someday in the future. But second stage then turns around and then deorbits and burns up in the atmosphere. But they have long-term plans someday of actually reusing second stage as well. Any comments?
Yeah, I just got one comment on a different subject for deep space. The new James Hubble telescope, they're looking at deep space now, okay? Are they actually seeing other lights on other planets?
No, but, you know, they'd like to. They look for identification symbols. So if they look at a star system, and they know there's planets going around it, they'll take the light that's going from the sun, from their sun, from the star, as it passes in front of the planet, and through spectroscopy, they could look at that spectrograph, and they could tell what those planets, you know, what the planet atmosphere is like, you know, and if they ever see like methane or, you know, something, oxygen or something, they could say, oh, there might be something alive down there. There might be, you know, vegetation or who knows what. They have a lot of cases like that, but of course they can't confirm, you know, anything like that. They actually have a hard time actually seeing a planet. There's no pictures. If you bring it up, there's no picture of a planet yet. But they're getting there, and someday they'll even have bigger telescopes going up into deep space. The coronagraph, and you know, they'll block the light from the star, and they'll be able to actually photograph, you know, a planet. I mean, that's long term, but you know, they know the physics is there. They know they would be able to do that in the future. Back to you, Charlie.
Okay, so the stuff that I see on my telephone, I'll just write that off as stupidity.
Oh. Yeah, if they're saying that, they're confirming that, yeah. I guarantee it's not confirmed, unless it happened in the last 5 minutes. And that would be breaking news. No, that's you know, they can use words like suggest, or they are studying, but there's no confirmation. Okay, very good. They do a lot of experiments on board the space station. One of the ones I like that they're doing is they're trying to
create concrete on the International Space Station. You know, they want to see if they can actually make it with similar materials to what the moon is made out of. In other words, the goal is to someday go to the moon, and they need to build habitats, you know, and they would love to, like, 3D print a house, you know, where you could have this 2-inch goo coming out of a nozzle, and, you know, going around and around, and you could put exterior walls, interior walls, you know, ceilings. They would love to be able to do that. But to do that, they'd have to make what you would call, they call it concrete. That's what they're trying to duplicate. And they've had some success with some of the materials. And they're going to put the tests inside of a container and eventually fly it back on a SpaceX cargo vehicle. Right now you have that's the only one that returns to Earth with cargo, science equipment and things like that. So that would be good if they can get that back in a lab and study it and see if they can tweak it a little bit, figure out how to do this, because someday they plan on actually having people on the moon. You know, they'll start off small with a temporary base, maybe, you know, where somebody can live there for a couple of weeks. But eventually, when they figure out how to stay there permanently, you could eventually have crews of 6, 8, 9, you know, and more, eventually permanently living on the moon. Somewhere down the line after that, you would need to develop dwellings instead of living in the big tin cans that we send up there that they'll be temporarily living in, when they land on the moon. Those landing vehicles become their home, or they'll be able to live in maybe these lava tubes that they know are on the moon as well. But anyway, one of the things they would like to do is try to create some form of concrete, some hard structure. You know, you can't bring it from Earth; way too heavy. You know, every pound that goes up to the moon or Mars costs, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. I think that's a good experiment. One of the hundreds of experiments that they're doing on the International Space Station. Let me just drop it and see if anybody else wants to sign in before we actually go off. Maybe Frank on Echo Link or something. Let me just stand by.
Yeah, I was actually away from the phone for a couple of minutes, so I have no comments to add right now. Just got back. WB2BX, though. Thanks, though.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Frank. You know, I don't leave enough time when I unkey, you know. And I know SpaceX is getting ready to launch their Starship again, but I don't have a date. You know, you read the websites, and you know it's like they're going off tomorrow. You know, but they're working on it. They built another launch tower down in Texas. This way down. Now they have two of them, and I think the reasoning behind that is, you know, they're going to launch a Starship, try to have it do its thing, and they plan on bringing the booster back, you know, not on a barge, but they plan on catching it with these big arms from the same place that they took off from. And I think their concern is that, you know, this thing's going to come down and destroy the launch pad, and then they won't have a plan B, you know, for a long period of time. So I think that's the rationale. And the long-time rationale is, if it works, then they'll have two launch complexes. You know, they'll be able to do multiple flights. We'll have to wait and see. We'll just have to wait. Any other last comments before we sign off for this evening? This is WS2M.
No, Paul. No comment.
Real good, Charlie. Thanks for joining us again, and with all your
information and questions, well appreciated. I'm going to turn it back over to Roy. Tomorrow night we have the Club InfoNet, followed by the Swap and Shop, and followed by Newsline. That all starts at 8:30, not 8 o'clock. This net always starts at 8. Roy, over to you, AC2GS, WS2N, for the SpaceNet report, for the TechNet. Back to you, Roy.
Thank you, Paul. Hopefully I won't pull out of All-Star before I get done for tonight. Thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for all that you do for the technical net. Thank you for all that you do with the club. We all appreciate it, and I especially appreciate it. And I appreciate everyone's participation tonight. Hopefully you'll join me again next Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do it all over again. Everyone, have a great week. Enjoy what's left of the summer. Stay safe, be well, and as always, like to share a couple of lines. Dick would often end the TechNet with advice to be kind to each other. And, of course, there's good old Epictetus. It's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So try to keep your mind open, but not so open that your brain falls out. Anyway, have a great week. Stay safe, be well. We'll talk again down the line. This is AC2GS, and I'll be clear after I say... Slava Ukraine.
This is Kilo Echo 2 Alpha Juliet Uniform. If I can, I'll try to listen to tomorrow night's meeting. DYC testing.
Time complete. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. That tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Echo 2, Bravo Tango Bravo on frequency.
W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m.
Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Yes, sir.
W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Charlie, KD2KH, WA2VFM. WB2ZSC. KD2KH, WA2VFM.
FlyMarkInfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
N2X, you listening?
KA2YHY listening.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Thank you.
Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
N2MEX. N2MEX is listening. N2MEX is listening.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Whiskey Bravo 2, Mike Sierra Bravo, what's that?